If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
With the timelines we have in 1031 exchanges, you know, sometimes people are rushing to kind of find that property so they don't have to pay taxes. But even if you're paying 20 to 30% in taxes, you can lose far more than that by buying a bad piece of property. Don't let taxes necessarily drive the wagon.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Michael Brady is Executive Vice President of Madison 1031, a national qualified intermediary for tax-deferred exchanges. As a certified exchange specialist and attorney, his responsibilities include consulting with clients and their advisors to provide guidance on the regulations affecting 1031 exchanges, as well as overseeing Madison 1031 Exchange's national sales and marketing efforts. Michael, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Hey, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to come on and chat. You know, 1031 is a hot topic right now. We're recording this, what's today's date? May 5th. And, you know, there's a lot of things being kicked around regarding 1031. But before we get into that, can you give us just a 60-second high-level overview? What is a 1031?
Yeah, let me just start off by saying, you know, in our industry, we prefer not to be in the news. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But essentially, 1031 is a section, it comes from Internal Revenue Code Section 1031, which has been part of the tax code since 1920, or the concept of exchanging has. So this is not some recent loophole. This is part and part of our modern tax code. And what it does is it allows investors to basically defer paying taxes when they sell commercial real estate. Okay, it used to apply to other assets, but now since 2017, only applies to commercial real estate. And you could defer paying those taxes by buying, quote unquote, like-kind property in exchange for the one that you sold. So for instance, if you and I each had a property the other liked and we traded deeds, well, that's a 1031 exchange. And the reason why we don't have to pay taxes on that or can defer the taxes is because there's no cash changing hands, right? It's property for property.
Right.
Okay. And so they came up with other structures using a qualified intermediary, which is the service we provide, whereby the taxpayer essentially exchanges with us. So for tax purposes, they give us their property. We then sell it. We take the proceeds of that sale, we buy a property for somebody else and give that property to our client in exchange. That's what happens for tax purposes, okay? It's not what happens in reality. So that's how it's designed. What happens in reality that the Senate or the Congress was actually in passing the regulations or the IRS in passing the regulations said it was sufficient that we don't actually have to take title to the properties and do a direct swap. It's sufficient if this qualified intermediary, which is a neutral party who's not an agent of the taxpayer, essentially holds the proceeds in between the sale and the purchase. So that for tax purposes, the taxpayer is receiving property for property. They never touch the money because if they touch the money in between, they have to pay taxes. So that's essentially the way it works. And then, you know, you can defer the tax rates, which, you know, can be quite significant when you sell property.
Sure, sure. I guess I didn't realize it applied only to commercial. I mean, you know, you hear a lot about this with single family rentals and things like that. Is that defined as commercial?
Yeah, when I say commercial, I mean that very, very broadly. So really, when I say commercial, I mean any property, you know, rental property that is not used for personally, right? So you cannot do this on your primary residence. You should not do it on a flip also, you know, if you're buying and selling in short order, you know, not. But typically your rental property in any sector should be able to be exchanged under 1031.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting. Gotcha. Okay. So now we have a high level view of what 1031s are. Let's get more into the weeds on probably the hot topic. I know you said you guys don't want to be in the news. What does that mean?
Yeah. So, and this is not the first time it's happened, right? So right now, what we're looking at is the Biden administration has this huge infrastructure package that they've proposed. And, you know, to help the economy, to help the recovery from the pandemic, which has, you know, a lot of nice pieces to it and a lot of things that should be beneficial to the country. But one of the ways they want to pay for this is they want to raise taxes. Okay. And so they've targeted higher income earners, the wealthy, you know, for tax increases. They want to raise the income tax rates on those people. And by that, I think they define that as anybody making over $400,000 annually. But in addition, what kind of came up was this idea, which has been kicking around over many, many years, that all this money, these deferred tax dollars, could somehow help pay for this package if they severely limited the tax deferral available under 1031, Internal Revenue Code Section 1031. So they proposed that instead of any investor being able to do a 1031 exchange, you could only do it if you were deferring $500,000 of capital gain or less. Okay. So, you know, it depends where you are. So, you know, I'm in New York. And in New York, if you're selling an investment property in Manhattan, for instance, you could have a capital gain of several million dollars, or, you know, certainly in excess of $1 million. And so the high end of the market would be severely curtailed. But you don't necessarily have to be a millionaire to have $1 million of gain on your property, right? You've paid tax, you know, you've paid taxes on the income that property is generated. You could have, you know, bought a property many, many years ago. We have a lot of investors who have properties that they bought in the 70s and they've appreciated. And really it's their only asset. You know, your mom and pop investor who, I'll give you kind of an example, you know, people who maybe bought a building in Manhattan, they operated a garment store on the first floor and they rented out some residential units above it. Okay. And they scrape by, and the rents from the units probably didn't generate all that much because, you know, we have rent stabilization and rent control in New York. Lo and behold, here it is, you know, 20, 30 years later, and that property that they bought for a couple $100,000 is now worth $5 million, right? Now, this couple doesn't have $5 million, right? They have this asset. So now when they sell it, because they're selling it at such a high threshold, they would have to pay taxes that are equal about one third of their profit, let's say, between federal, city, state, depreciation, recapture. And so they're going to take a haircut. And, you know, so it's not just the very wealthy that would be impacted by this $500,000 threshold. So, and, you know, if you curtail 1031 exchanges, it de-incentivizes people to sell, quite frankly, which has dramatic effects on the market as a whole. So, you know, that couple, if they have to pay a $2.5 million tax bill, let's say, or maybe it's 1.7 to, I've been making up numbers now, but, you know, a couple million dollar tax bill, they may not want to sell, right? If they don't sell, if this becomes part of the market where people are holding on because they have an asset that's producing income, but they don't want to move on because it's going to cost so much in taxes, they won't sell. And if they don't sell, well, that hurts the real estate economy. So in a place like New York, where real estate is really one of the largest segments of our economy, people aren't selling. So there's no more brokerage commissions, right, on those sales. Attorneys who represent buyers and sellers in New York on transactions will have, you know, less transactions. The cities and states themselves have revenue from transfer taxes and recording fees and all those things. So that's now going to be impacted. Not to mention, of course, our industry, which, you know, selfishly, we'd rather not have our own business, you know, curtailed. But also most of the people that buy investment property in a 1031 exchange, they tend to fix them up, right? So they try to make it ready for new renters. And so now they're not hiring contractors, right? And, you know, and now there's no incentive to kind of improve your spaces. So tenants are living in aging buildings because there's no incentive to really add dollars to it. So it cycles through the economy. And we believe that what the benefits or what the tax dollars that might be generated by curtailing 1031 are more than offset by the damage that would be done to the economy at large.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think anyone listening to this podcast isn't going to argue with any of your points to that. What does someone do to prepare if this does become part of the plan?
Well, we don't know exactly what it's going to look like. And maybe I could just talk about, not politically, but let's talk about the political framework that we're looking at, right? So right now, this bill, if it comes forward, I think they're looking to pass it under what they call reconciliation. So that means they could pass it with a simple majority. They would not have to worry about the filibuster. So that's a little bit scary. But the reality is the Democrats have a razor thin, they don't have a majority actually in Congress, right? Between the independents that canvass with the Democrats, I think it's 50-50, which means Kamala Harris is the tie-breaking vote. So that assumes that to get this passed, it every Democrat's going to have to vote in favor of it, or, you know, some Republicans are going to have to cross over, which I don't think would happen. But so every Democrat would have to vote in favor of it. Right now, it doesn't appear that some of the more centrist to right-leaning Democrats would necessarily support this. So Joe Manchin doesn't seem to be a supporter, not even so much on the 1031 side, but the package in general. Kristen Sinema And I think that there are other, you know, congressmen you might be surprised, like Chuck Schumer, who's my congressman, who many people think is a liberal firebrand. This is going to hurt the real estate economy. So I don't know that Chuck Schumer is going to be in favor of this. So I'd be surprised if we see it actually happen. I'm not saying it's impossible. I can't put odds on it because, listen, I've been wrong in projecting politics for the last 2 years now. But, you know, we'll kind of see where the chips lay in I guess, a couple of months.
What are some things that people could do that are an alternative to a 1031 and yet somehow structure it such that you have at least the perceived same benefits?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things out there. Number one, you could not sell, right? I mean, you can hold on to your capital gains. You know, there's some talk about also doing away with the what we call the step up in basis. You know, typically now if you die holding an appreciated asset, the capital gains disappears. They call that the step up in basis. In 1031 exchanges, we refer to that as swapping until you drop. Keep doing 1031 exchanges, you drop dead and the capital gain disappears. They may eliminate that, but if they don't, you could hold on to the property and just pass it on to your heirs without paying paying capital gains taxes, but you have to watch estate taxes because they're changing those thresholds also. The other thing that's out there is the qualified opportunity zone, which is something that a real estate, by and large, you know, they've been out there since 2017. They have been, quite frankly, more attractive to non-real estate investors, such as people who, you know, may have securities gains, you're selling your stock, you have gain, selling collectible artwork, things that you cannot do 1031 exchanges with. 1031 exchanges only apply to real property. But now, if you did not have 1031, it might make sense to invest in a qualified opportunity zone, which allows you some deferral of your capital gain, at least until 2026. Okay. In 2026, you would have to pay the taxes, less your basis would be adjusted depending on how long you held the property. So you may pay less taxes, but you'll pay taxes in 2026. But then any future appreciation would be tax-free. Okay. Kind of like a Roth IRA. So if you invested $1 million, right, and then held it for 10 years, and it was now worth $2 million, that extra $1 million of gain would be tax-free, which is pretty, pretty powerful. Now, you know, the downsides, you know, you're very limited as to where you can invest. You have to invest in lower income communities that are designated as qualified opportunity zones, okay? Typically, that means that median income is 80% of what the statewide or citywide median income is, and it's designated by the governor as a qualified opportunity zone. And you also, if you're buying a real estate project, you also have to make substantial improvements to that real estate typically, which means that, you know, if the building on the property is worth $600,000, you got to make $601,001 of improvements to the structure. So it's a construction, you know, improvement play. But that's another avenue that you could go. Other than that, there's not too much else.
What about a Delaware statutory trust? I've heard that thrown around as an alternative.
So a Delaware statutory trust is actually part and parcel of a 1031 exchange. It's really just a type of property you can buy through a 1031 exchange. So you would sell your multifamily building that you had basically put your sweat equity in. You dealt with those three T's, the tenants, the trash, and the toilets. And you're fed up of the midnight phone call saying, you know, Johnny clogged the toilet, you got to get over here. You can go buy something passive. So you can buy a percentage interest, a fractional interest in a larger institutional property. So a sponsor will put together, they'll go buy, let's say, I'm trying to think of a good example, a medical office building. Seems to be, you know, a sector that's interesting these days. So they'll buy it and they'll buy that in a land trust formed under typically Delaware law. Under a revenue ruling in 2004, the IRS has determined that you can sell a beneficial interest in those trusts, and that would be deemed to be like-kind property for a 1031 exchange. So really, if you're limiting 1031 exchanges, if you have over, you know, $500,000 of gain, the Delaware statutory trust is not going to help. There still would be a decent option for people who, you know, have that meet the threshold. I should mention also you have to be an accredited investor to buy those properties. So there are, you know, some limitations on those as well.
Interesting. So if this goes away, there's really no hiding is the wrong word. I mean, because again, the value that is created economically, I think, by rolling over these properties, while it's unknown, it is very good in what happens, just for the reasons you outlined before. But outside of that, if 1031s gets, you know, it gets chopped, it goes away, then you know, it doesn't seem like there's much else that we can do as real estate investors besides just pay the tax.
Yeah. I mean, there's some other programs out there that, you know, I'm not so sold on, but yeah, typically, you know, in the mainstream, the stuff that we know concretely works, you know, 1031 goes away, you really have the QOZ and, you know, maybe not much else. There may be some other creative structuring your accountants can do, but.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was doing some reading on that and it sounds like there's some gray area that you could venture into, but it may not withstand an audit in the long run. So that is very fascinating. So what does your business look like if 1031 goes away?
Well, it won't go away, right? So we'll see, I mean, at least under the current proposal. I should back up and say, you know, this isn't our first rodeo, right? So during the Biden administration, they had proposed limiting 1031 exchanges to $1 million, which, you know, in comparison to 500, I think is preferable. Maybe that's where they'll wind up. And the 2017 Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which was passed by the Republicans, initially they were looking at 1031 and they had considered eliminating it outright. Ultimately, they did eliminate 1031 exchanges of personal property. So you cannot do exchanges of things like aircraft or, you know, commercial vehicles or collectible artwork, you know, or, you know, business equipment like restaurants. If you sold a restaurant, you could exchange the restaurant equipment like the stove and everything and buy other equipment. You know, you can't do that under 1031 anymore. So it's not our first rodeo. So, you know, our business, the higher end obviously would be less available. I don't know what the marketability for, you know, companies like ours is if we're limited to $500,000 exchanges. I can tell you since the pandemic, we're seeing more stuff on the lower end anyway. I mean, I'm not seeing several $100 million transactions out of Manhattan anymore. They may be happening, but, you know, I guess maybe I'm missing them. But still, you know, so it'll be available to some investors, but it's certainly going to put a cramp in our business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's all very, very fascinating things that are happening right now. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see, unfortunately.
Yeah. I would just urge people if you have the ear of a congressman or a senator, you know, it makes sense to certainly, you know, try to lobby them. If you're in the real estate industry, we as an industry are lobbying, you know, our organization, the Federation of Exchange Accommodators, which I always joke sounds like something out of Star Trek, but is our trade group. They're lobbying in association with other real estate organizations like the National Association of Realtors and, you know, pushing back on some of this. And, you know, we're hopeful that, you know, cooler heads will prevail and they'll see the wisdom of keeping 1031 intact and in the packages coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Michael, this has been fascinating. Thank you for taking the time to really enlighten us on what's going on currently as it regards to, or as it pertains to 1031s. This has been great. Let's jump here into the final four. First question is this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
To an aspiring investor. Well, I do this all the time at 1031 exchanges. So I always advise my clients that you're better off paying taxes than making a bad investment. You know, so with the timelines we have in 1031 exchanges, you know, sometimes people are rushing to kind of find that property so they don't have to pay taxes. But even if you're paying 20 to 30% in taxes, you can lose far more than that by buying a bad piece of property. Don't let taxes necessarily drive the wagon.
Right. No, I think that's absolutely, absolutely wise. And it sounds like you've seen that happen more than once.
It's happened. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Which again, you guys aren't the advisors on what they're buying. You're just watching the transactions occur. So that's fascinating. Question number two is this: when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
So a couple of things. Number one, I am an avid exerciser. I find it critical for just about anything for me to function. Even I need that morning run. You know, I try to get up most mornings and either do a run. I just recently got myself a rowing machine since I've kind of been away from the gym. Love the row also. And, you know, I'm constantly trying to be active first thing in the morning, and it kind of sets the tone for the rest of my day. That, and I'm an avid reader. You know, I never stop trying to learn.
Right. No, those are two great things. That's for sure. Question number three is this: when it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Yeah. So I actually do a lot of community work. And so I'll give you one example. So when the pandemic hit, you know, early 2020, with a group of other organizations, we put together something. I live on Long Island in New York. We put together something called Cooperation Long Island to help kind of coordinate mutual aid for people who needed it, whether it's food services or, you know, associated sundries, you know, childcare things. And so we're looking to help continue to make changes, you know, in after the pandemic to help people, help I guess, address some of the systemic things that put people at a disadvantage. Yeah. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Good for you. I'm sure that's a lot of work, but you know, we need coordinators like you to make stuff like that happen. So that's great. Michael, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. So email is great. You can reach me at mbrady@madison1031.com. I'm really good about answering my emails. That's really the best. You can also look for me on LinkedIn. I love connecting with people on LinkedIn. And yeah, I would give phones, but that's a little bit less reliable. I try to get to my, but emails are best. And then I typically try to schedule time with folks.
Wonderful. Michael, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Sam. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.